history, geology, paleontology, astronomy, meteorology that nothing short of cataclysmic thinking can break down these united walls of exclusionism. Unknown monsters sometimes appear in the ocean. When, upon the closed system of normal preoccupations, a story of a sea serpent appears, it is inhospitably treated. To us of the wider cordialities, it has recommendations for kinder reception. I think that we shall be noted in recognitions of good works for our bizarre charities. Far back in the topography of the 19th century, Richard Proctor was almost submerged in an ocean of smugness, but now and then he was a little island emerging from the gently alternating doubts and satisfactions of his era, and by means of several papers upon the sea serpent he so protruded and gave variety to a dreary uniformity. Proctor reviewed some of the stories of sea serpents. He accepted some of them. This will be news to some conventionalists. But the mystery that he could not solve is their conceivable origin. To be sure, this earth may not be round, or top-shaped, and may tower away somewhere, perhaps with the great Antarctic plateau as its foothills, to a gigantic existence commensurate throughout with the sea monsters that sometimes reach regions known to us. Judging by our experience in other fields of research, we suspect that this earth never has been traversed except in conventional trade routes and standard explorations. One supposes that enormous forms of life that have appeared upon the surface of the ocean did not come from conditions of great pressure below the surface. If there be no habitat of their own in unknown seas of this earth, the monsters fell from the sky, surviving for a while. In his day, Charles Lyell never said a more preposterous thing than this. However, we have no idea that mere preposterousness is a criterion. Then at times the things have fallen upon land, presumably. To scientific minds in their present anemia of malnutrition, we offer new nourishment. There are materials for a science of neopaleontology, as it were, at least a new view of animal remains upon this earth. Remains of monsters, supposed to have lived geologic ages ago, are sometimes found, not in ancient deposits, but upon, or near, the surface of the ground, sometimes barely covered. I have notes upon a great pile of bones, supposed to be the remains of a whale, out in open view in a western desert. In the American Museum of Natural History, New York City, is the mummified body of a monster called a trachodon, found in Converse County, Wyoming. It was not found upon the surface of the ground, which is bad for our attempts to stimulate paleontology. But the striking datum to me is that the only other huge mummy that I know of is another trachodon, now in the Museum of Frankfurt. If only extraordinarily would geologic processes mummify remains of a huge animal, doubly extraordinarily would two animals of the same species be so exclusively affected. One at least gives some consideration to the idea that these trachodons are not products of geologic circumstances, but were affected, in common, by other circumstances. By inspiration, or progressive deterioration, one then conceives of the things as having wafted and dried in space, finally falling to this earth. Our swooping vandals are relieved with showering mummies. Life is turning out to be interesting. Organic substances like life fluids of living things have rained from the sky. However, it is enough for our general purposes to make acceptable simply that unknown substances have, in large quantities, fallen from the sky. That is neoism enough, it seems to me. I consider, myself, all such data relatively to this earth's stationariness or possible motions. In Seal et Terra, 22-198, it is said that, about 2 p.m., June 8, 1901, a glue-like substance fell at Sart. The story is told by an investigator, M. Michael, a meteorologist. He says that he saw the substance falling from the sky, but does not give an estimate of duration. He says that he arrived during the last 5 minutes of the shower. Editors and extra geographers can't help trying to explain. The editor of Seal et Terra writes that, 3 days before, there had been, at Antwerp, a great fire, in which, among other substances, a large quantity of sugar had been burned. He asks whether there could be any connection. Antwerp is about 80 miles from Sarthe. September 2, 1905 The Tragedy of the Space Pig. In the English Mechanic, 86-100, col. Mark Wick writes that, according to the Cambrian Natural Observer, something was seen in the sky, at Llangollen, Wales, September 2, 1905. It is described as an intensely black object, about 2 miles above the Earth's surface, moving at the rate of about 20 miles an hour. col. Mark Wick writes, could it have been a balloon? We give col. Mark Wick good rating as an extra geographer, but of the early, or differentiating type, a transitional, if not a sphinx, so he was not quite developed enough to publish the details of this object. In the Cambrian Natural Observer, 1905-35 the Journal of the Astronomical Society of Wales it is said that, according to accounts in the newspapers, an object had appeared in the sky, at Llangollen, Wales, September 2, 1905. At the schoolhouse, in Wronceslight I think that's it, with all my credulity, some of these Welsh names look incredible to me, in my notes the thing in the sky had been examined through powerful field glasses. We are told that it had short wings, and flew, or moved, in a way described as casually inclining sideways. It seemed to have 4 legs, and looked to be about 10 feet long. According to several witnesses it looked like a huge, winged pig, with webbed feet. Much speculation was rife as to what the mysterious object could be. 5 days later, according to a member of the Astronomical Society of Wales see Cambrian Observer, 1905-30 a purple-red substance fell from the sky, at Llanelly, Wales. I don't know that my own attitude toward these data is understood, and I don't know that it matters in the least, also from time to time my own attitude changes, but very largely my feeling is that not much can be, or should be, concluded from our meager accounts, but that so often are these occurrences, in our fields, reported, that several times every year there will be occurrences that one would like to have investigated by someone who believes that we have written nothing but bosh, and by someone who believes in our data almost religiously. It may be that, early in February, 1892, a luminous thing traveled back and forth, exploring for 10 hours in the sky of Sweden. The story is copied from a newspaper, and ridiculed, in the English Mechanic, 55-34. Upon March 7, 1893, a luminous object shaped like an elongated pear was seen in the sky of Val de la Haye, by M. Raymond Cowlin, El Astro, 1893-169. M. Cowlin's suggestion is that the light may have been a signal suspended from a balloon. The signal idea is interesting. In the summer of 1897, several weeks after Professor Andrea and his 2 companions had sailed in a balloon, from Amsterdam Island, Spitsbergen, it was reported that a balloon had been seen in British Columbia. There was wide publicity, the report was investigated. It may be that had a terrestrial balloon escaped from somewhere in the United States or Canada, or if there had been a balloon ascension at this time, the circumstances would have been reported, it may well be that the object was not Andrea's balloon. President Bell, of the National Geographic Society, heard of this object, and heard that details had been sent to the Swedish Foreign Office, and cabled to the American Minister, at Stockholm, for information. He publishes his account in the National Geographic magazine, 9-102. He was referred to the Swedish consul, at San Francisco. In reply to inquiry, the consul telegraphed the following data, which had been collected by the president of the Geographical Society of the Pacific. Statement of a balloon passing over the Horsefly Hydraulic Mining Camp, in Cariboo, British Columbia, 52 degrees, 20, and longitude 120 degrees, 30. From letters of J.B. Robson, manager of the Cariboo Mining Co., and of Mrs. W.M. Sullivan, the blacksmith's wife, there, and a statement of Mr. John J. Newsom, San Francisco, then at camp. About 2 or 3 o'clock, in the afternoon, between 4th and 7th of August last, weather calm and cloudless, Mrs. Sullivan, while looking over the hydraulic bank, noticed a round, grayish-looking object in the sky, to the right of the sun. As she watched, it grew larger and was descending. She saw the larger mass of the balloon above, and a smaller mass apparently suspended from the larger. It continued to descend, until she plainly recognized it as a balloon and a large basket hanging thereto. It finally commenced to swing violently back and forth, and move very fast toward the eastward and northward. Mrs. Sullivan called her daughter, aged 18, and about this time Mrs. Robson and her daughter were observing it. "If someone saw a strange fish in the ocean, we'd like to know what was it like. Stripes on him, spots what? It would be unsatisfactory to be told over and over only that a dark body had crossed some waves." In Cosmos, NS, 39-356, a satisfactory correspondent writes that, at Lille, France, September 4, 1898, he saw a red object in the sky. It was like the planet Mars, but was in the position of no known planet. He looked through his telescope, and saw a rectangular object, with a violent colored band on one side of it, and the rest of it striped with black and red. He watched it 10 minutes, during which time it was stationary, then, like the object that was seen at the time of the Powell mystery, it cast out sparks and disappeared. In the English Mechanic, 75-417, col. Mark Wick writes that, upon May 10, 1902, a friend of his had seen in the sky, in South Devon, a great number of highly colored objects like little suns or toy balloons. "Altogether beats me," says col. Mark Wick.